What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of From Broadway to Belmont. I am your host, Krista Sellums, and with me, as always, is unfortunately not Kevin Koff. Kevin's not here this week. He's on vacation, but I'm not doing a solo pod. I reached out to a buddy of mine. I met him back in October at the Rangers opening night game against the Capitals this past season. He lives right across the street from me, which is awesome. He's from the New York area. Everyone, give a warm welcome to my good friend, Jake.
Hey, everybody. If we can rename the pod this week to Broadway and 32nd, as it's probably going to be Rangers-focused the entire time. But we've been friends since the first game of the season, literally, from Washington versus New York till now. So the stress has been real.
Yeah, it's a pleasure having you on the show. Glad you could be here. Kevin sends his love. Kevin, I love you. I miss you. I can't wait to see your beautiful face next week. And when you hear this on Thursday, which is tomorrow, I hope this brings a smile to your face. And I hope you're having a good time down in Hilton Head. Enough about Kevin. On to some hockey. We're just going to jump right into it this week. If you've been living under a fucking rock or you just haven't been paying attention, the Rangers are in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Rangers are in the finals, Eastern Conference, playing the two-time champs, Lightning. We're going to talk about it because we didn't talk about it last week because we recorded before Game 1. So let's run it back. Game 1, an absolute fucking shit-kicking of the Lightning, which had New York and the Garden up in fucking flames. Igor's better chance, probably Vass, you suck chance. I mean, the Rangers were giving it to the Lightning Game 1. And I think mainly that was due to the Lightning having 9 days worth of rest. You can say otherwise, but I think it was Vass was super rusty. I mean, he looked awful. The team looked slow. It looked like they had 9 days worth of rest. Jake, I just want to jump right into it. Yeah. How do you feel about the whole thing? Hold on. All right, so my dad just called me. There might be a little bit of a chop in the audio, and I said, hold on, right before I paused it. And I'm not fucking taking it out because Kevin's the wizard behind chopping and screwing the episodes. So I'm not doing it, so you're just going to have to deal with it. But like I said, I think the points that I was just making was it was a shit-kicking for the Lightning. They looked super rusty. Bass looked rusty. And it was a 6-2 win for New York. It was 1-1 after two. Rangers poured it on in the second period, scoring three, put them up 4-2 at that point, and then they put two more in the third period, winning 6-2. So, Jake, thoughts on the game, thoughts on game one, thoughts on the Garden, the environment, you know, what did you see in the game? What did you like? What did you not like? How did you feel?
I think it was a combination of Tampa going deep into the playoffs 2 years in a row, and what that means is 1 year in a row because they won two cups in less than 1 year. A combination of that and them having, 11 days off around that?
9 days, yeah.
9 days off. So it's just a weird dynamic of being tired, having too much rest, having people injured. Brayden Point being out is a huge
part
of it.
That is huge.
It's like us not having Strome in the lineup, as we'll speak soon, but it's them being tired, having too much rest.
I wouldn't compare Strome being out of the lineup.
It's our 2C and 1C, right? But
I would say it's more of like if like Panarin or Zibanejad were out of that. If Zibanejad was out of the lineup, that's our equivalent to Brayden Point.
Exactly. And the Rangers coming into this as, where the fuck did this come from? Wow, we are in the third round. We're in the Eastern Conference Final. It's a great experience for everybody because the only person that wouldn't have this exact reaction would be Chris Kreider. And as we all know, he likes to scream and yell during each game, and I'm sure he's just as hype as everybody else. So I think a combination of all those things together for game one combined to a fantastic game at Madison Square Garden, everybody cheering, probably one of the loudest games at the Garden I've ever heard.
It was fucking insane. Oh, and also, if you haven't noticed, we're doing this podcast in person.
Yep.
So that's why we're going back and forth like this. But yeah, no, it was an absolutely fucking insane environment. I have never seen that place.
Ever.
Like, you could feel the vibrations through the TV. I mean, people were just dialed in. They were excited. It was overall just it was an exciting game and an exciting start to the series, a series that all New York fans or New York Rangers fans would have loved to have seen and saw, because you're going up against a team that's super well rested. You didn't know what was going to happen. And then just to watch them come out and kind of pump, they pumped the Lightning. Yeah. I mean, the Lightning were just completely unprepared for that game. And that kind of bled into game two. And even though, if you look at the score, it was a 3-2 game, it was super close. Igor made some insane saves towards the end of the game with the last like couple, the last like 40 seconds or so. That was still the Rangers game. The Rangers were in control of that game for 59 minutes.
Yeah. You know what that game reminded me of? You know, the Henrik Lundqvist era, where we had a great game, we scored 3 goals, that's all we need to win, right? And in the last few minutes, the other team scores, and it's a constant heart attack till the end.
Yeah, but that was a classic, Ranger. That was a classic, like, old regime, you know, Rangers are up, but they make you sit at the edge of your seat. And that's exactly what I was doing in my apartment that night. You know, I'm watching this game on the edge of my couch because they're only up one, and they cannot get out of their zone. The Lightning have 6 skaters on. It's like any time the Rangers are trying to get the puck out, they'd get it maybe to like the neutral zone, maybe to like center ice, and then boom, Lightning are right back in. They're super quick than they were getting, and Stamkos had an insane chance that Igor was able to stop. So, I mean, even though New York controlled that game, they kind of fumbled that last like 40 seconds, and Igor kept them in it. Classic, almost Lundqvist-esque performance. And it was, but again, I still felt like that was New York's game. They were still dominant. Tampa had jumbled a little things here and there, worked on some stuff, but they still, I don't think they didn't do all their homework, and they still hadn't figured out the Lightning yet. And that's huge. They didn't figure out the Rangers yet. The Lightning obviously could figure out who the Lightning are. So yeah, that's the reason why I'm kind of speeding through this is because games 1 and 2 were so like New York heavy. They just looked like the better team. There's not much else to talk about. I mean, besides the fact that Filipino kind of had a coming out party. I mean, I think in game 1 he scored his 7th goal in the playoffs, and everyone kept saying, "Yeah, he's got 8 goals the whole season. Now he's got 7. It's an insane performance. He's definitely been a playoff performer. And I think the only other thing to note, that came out of, I think, game 2 or at least game 1 was, I think it was game 1. Chris Kreider is an all-time goal scorer in the playoffs for New York. I don't have the list in front of me who he passed, but they did make the announcement on the ESPN broadcast and on Twitter and stuff that he is the all-time leading goal scorer. So a little tangent that I want to go on, because I asked you and I asked Kevin, and granted, like we're seeing, what is this, season 9 or 10 for Chris Kreider?
Yeah.
Okay, so Chris Kreider had an amazing season this year. He's the all-time leading goal scorer for New York in the playoffs. If he does not revert back to a sub-30 goal scorer, let's say he continues to have 30 goals for at least the next 5 years or however long he's a Ranger. Let's say in an ideal world, he's named the captain in the Rangers.
Yeah.
He scores 30 to 35 goals a year for the rest of his career. And let's say he, whatever, however many assists, let's say he scores 30 to 35 goals and finishes with 70 points for the rest of his career, right? If they win a cup and he does this, do you retire his number?
Well, yes. And my opinion on this is, even if the Rangers didn't win in 94, for example, he reminds me of Adam Graves. Okay. And that man was going to retire. His number was going to retire. He was going to become an all-time Ranger. He was that way since he left Edmonton and got traded. Chris Kreider is the embodiment of what the Rangers want. He scores goals. He stands in front of the net. He beats the shit out of people when he wants, half the time by accident. And he is the all-time goal scorer in the playoffs, right? So I think that this man is going to be the captain, and I think he's going to get his number retired. And along with that, go.
Yeah, I just, for me, I'm like on the fence about it, because like a part of me says there's a lot to get his number retired. If he were to retire right now, no, absolutely not.
No.
But like if you look at it, like he has 654 career games, 229 career goals, 423 total points. Let's say, you know, because he's got, I think, five or six years after this year, where his contract, I think
he has hard miles, but
yeah. So he's got I think, and I only think the Rangers are probably going to want to keep him on this team if he reverts back to how he's playing before for 3 years before they like really need to trade him.
Yeah.
And I think he can get a serious return for him. But I just think if he can get 30 to 35, finish with 70 points the rest of his career. Let's say he plays for 5 more years and does 70 points. It's 300 something. That's 300 additional points. So he's going to be at he'll be at probably well over 1,000 games at that point, or close to 1,000 games at that point. Let's say we add another 350 points if he does 70 points each year exactly.
Yeah.
That puts him at about 800-ish points, give or take, and he wins a cup. Then, yeah, you have a serious argument for retiring his number. Do I think they still do it? Maybe, maybe not. Because, like, when you think about, like, a number retirement, it's something that, like, this player had to do X, Y, and Z for someone to never wear that number again.
Yeah.
And even if Kreider does all that, and even if he wins a cup, he's still a Rangers legend. He'll go into the Rangers Hall of Fame. At that point, I would say he's more of a Hall of Fame player than he is a Rangers like a number in the rafters type player. Because for me, it's like when you get your number retired, it means you did not only what was expected of you, but you went so above and beyond. Like, there's a reason why Hank's number was retired 1 year, not even a full year after he retired, like, because he was New York Rangers. Even if Kreider does all this, it's still, like, a question mark for me. I would love to see it happen. Like, if he wins a cup and does what we're saying he does in an ideal world, it's great. But there's still, like, a part of me, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I just don't know. Like, it's questionable.
I think he has to win the cup. Well, so
cup is a mandatory. Yeah, if he does all of this and never wins a cup, no, you can't have your number retired.
No,
because even the guys who didn't win a cup who have their numbers retired were
trophies.
They have trophies. Yeah. They have just better career numbers. Yeah. And granted, yes, taking into account they were playing at different times, but it was like there's a reason why the gag line all has their numbers retired. It's like they had a fucking line called goal and game line. Like they were those dudes.
Yeah. Well, so I actually think he's more of a chance to get his number retired for the Rangers for a few reasons. I don't think he can make it to the Hockey Hall of Fame, even if he wins two cups I don't think he's going to win an individual championship or individual award. I don't think he's going to pass 500 goals, which is one of the thresholds. I don't think he's going to get 1,000 points for the Rangers. I think he has 70% of what he needs. He had an amazing start to his career in the playoffs in 2012-2011. He scored that amazing comeback goal for, I believe it was Game 5 against the Capitals in 2015 that led to the comeback. He has scored a 50-goal season, so this all reminds me of Adam Graves to that respect. I'm not that old. I don't remember it specifically. It's all videos. But I think if he captains this team, and the plan for the Rangers was not to go to the Eastern Conference Final this year, but they have the first and second overall pick the past few years. Their plan is to be good for a while. And if he's a captain for that team that leads these kids to the cup, which is the plan for the team, I assume that's what Drury wants, God willing, he will get his number retired. He just has to win. Yeah. I don't think he's a Hockey Hall of Fame, but he has to win. And also, I hope nobody freaks out calling him captain. Doesn't mean he's not going to get traded, as we've seen every other captain for every other team, including the Rangers.
So, yeah, I mean, the Rangers trade their captains. It's kind of been their MO for the last two captains.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked if it's not Ryan Strome just based on the Ryan name history, but yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like, because even if he scores another 150 to 200 goals, he still isn't at 500.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it's a steep hill to climb. It was just an interesting kind of thought and conversation that I was having with Kevin the other day, just because it was like, even if he wins a cup, he doesn't really have any individual trophies. Yeah. He just has a lot of Rangers records at this point.
Like Jokinen, the goalie from the 70s.
Yeah.
He went to the finals, lost. I don't think he has a Vezina. I could be entirely wrong, but he's just a Rangers legend because he was good when he needed to be good.
Well, we'll talk about him later. Hint, hint.
Yes.
If you're a dedicated listener, but back to the Rangers Lightning. So the first two games, there really wasn't much to discuss, just because it was so Rangers heavy. Even though the Rangers barely held on to win the end of Game 2, Game 3 is what Game 3 was an awesome game, and the the fan base on Twitter, and yes, Twitter is a fucking cesspool. It sucks because people just have the voice. They have a voice on Twitter, and they shouldn't have. 90% of Twitter should not have a voice. People should just not be on Twitter, because you would have thought the Rangers got blown out. It was a 9-0 loss to the Lightning. Game three. For all of you who think it was the end of the fucking world, it was, sure. You can make it's not even sure. You can make the argument that it was. It wasn't even make the argument. It was a gut punch loss. You lost the game with 41 seconds left. But if you look at the flip side of this, they lost that game with 41 seconds left. Kucherov made an insane pass to Palat to put the puck in the back of the net with 41 seconds left. That game was tied 2-2. I was texting another buddy of mine saying, all the Rangers need to do, if they can just get to overtime, they're still in this game. Yeah. It's still anyone's game. Unfortunately, as soon as I hit send on that message, the Lightning scored. So it was like, I felt like I kind of mushed the team. But that game, even though it was only a 3-2 win for the Lightning, I felt the Rangers they got lucky getting out of the period 0-0. They were up 2-1 after two, and they didn't get a chance to score in the third period, and Lightning were able to get two back and end up winning that game. But if you look at the shot totals, the Lightning had 52 shots. The Rangers had 30. Igor had to stand on his head to keep that team in that game. And I think that was the game too. And I think that also was the game where they had a chance to seal the deal. I think that was the game Gaudreau hit the post. You know, if that goal goes in, it's a different game. He had a shot. He beat Vass. It hits the post. If that goes in, the Rangers win that game. Or if the Rangers score on their, again, I feel like it happened in the Carolina series too. The Rangers had a 4-minute power play and they didn't do anything with it. They didn't generate any offense, and it sucked because it's like you don't get these 4-minute power plays ever, really. And the Rangers have had two chances in two different series and they didn't do fucking anything with it. And to top it all off, even though they had 30 seconds at the end after the Trouba penalty, that's where I'm going. Trouba took a really bad tripping penalty and gave the Lightning a chance to go 4-on-4. So you killed your power play. It's now 4-on-4 hockey. No one does anything. The Rangers go back on a power play for 30 more seconds, and they still didn't get a chance to do anything. It was embarrassing to watch because, again, like I said, you don't get those opportunities. And I just want, like, what were your thoughts when what did you think about that game? Because to me, I watched it. When they lost, it sucked. It was a gut punch. That was the kill shot. Like, if they won that game, I don't think they would have swept. But that was the game. If you won that, you have all the leverage on Tampa. Because now you're up 3-0. Even if they win a game, that game four, you are still up 3-1, and you're going home, and you're a better home team. That was the kill shot game, and unfortunately, it didn't go the Rangers' way because they just didn't take advantage of any of their opportunities. So I just want to know what were your thoughts on that?
So going to that game, they played out of their minds the first and second game. They did not play those games throughout the playoffs. That was a rare game against a back to back, or rare games against back to back champions. I think them taking their time traveling to Tampa, starting that game, and not starting the way they did in MSG, especially in front of a different crowd, of course, might have kicked them in the ass. The thing is, in that game, they did go up 2-0, but they kept taking stupid penalties. They kept not taking advantage of penalties in their power plays.
So Trouba had a huge, because everyone was saying Trouba had a huge game too, and that was the reverse Trouba game. He took two like phantom penalties. Yep. The one holding call, I get why they called it, but I just didn't like it. And then he took another penalty too. I don't remember what it was outside of the tripping call. He took another one that was just kind of like, God damn it. Like,
so I noticed that there's been a lot of talk about Trouba and his hits and everything like that. It seems like they gave him a penalty. They're telling him to calm down, kind of thing. Don't take runs of people. If you're going to fuck around with someone, don't hook them. It seems like they warned him. So my issue with Trouba that game is he didn't take the warning because he's been to the third round before. He played in the third round against Vegas in 2018. he has a target on him currently from the league, to be honest with you, and he didn't listen, and he had a bad game, and it happens. First, you should, by the way, no one should have death threats for a fan of Trouba online. Just wanted to get that out there.
Oh, yeah, that was just pathetic.
But Trouba had a bad game, but he's not a top two defenseman. He's on our middle pairing. It was not his fault. And I believe the fault of that game was Tampa Bay is third in penalty minutes. They have over 30 more penalty minutes than the Rangers. The Rangers have to take advantage of a penalty kill that is, I believe, it's fifth out of 16 teams right now that's last in the playoffs. They need to score. These penalty killers are mediocre, and they didn't take advantage of it. So it has nothing to do with our defense, which didn't play great, but in my opinion, all the shots were from the perimeter that game, and they didn't take advantage. They lost that game where they could have went up 3-0 in the Eastern Conference Final, and honestly, in a playoff series, who knows if they should have been there, and they are, so they do deserve to be there. But they have to win, and they didn't, and it happens.
Yeah, and I think that was that was also a game where I think that Cooper outcoached Gallant in the sense that he was able to figure out that Mika line, because all he had to do was just move Cirelli to a different line, play Mika more, and Cirelli's got a really good forecheck, and he plays a really aggressive style of hockey. And if you could figure out how to not let Mika and that first line generate offense, that first line is just bad. They just don't do anything.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. That first line was ghostly. I mean, Mika scored that first goal. Kreider had a goal. So it's like, yeah, I'm saying that. But there were two power play goals. Yeah. It wasn't like they were generating those goals on at 5v5. That first line, Vetrano is not a first line guy.
No.
He shouldn't be getting first line minutes because he just can't help them create offense. Even though, like, I do like Vetrano. I think he was a great addition to help this team win a cup, or potentially win a cup. One, I don't think he should be brought back long term, and two, he's not a first liner. And Gallant just showed that he saw what was happening. Cooper had outcoached him. He just kind of moved, and he didn't do anything. And I feel like that's something that Gallant does. He doesn't like to shuffle the lines, but shorten your bench a little bit at that point. Then, you know, maybe don't roll your fourth line out as much. Maybe just roll three lines out or do something. It's just like he gets stuck in his ways and sometimes thinks that, like, if I just keep throwing the fourth line out there to just hit someone or do something, dump the puck in or have a decent forecheck, then that's going to throw him off. But it didn't. It didn't throw the Lightning off. The Lightning stayed stuck to their guns, and they ended up winning that game.
And before we talk about how coaching, before we go to game four, I was wrong. They were fifth in the playoffs, which is number one actually right now for penalty kill in the playoffs. But Gallant needs to adjust. This is the third round of the playoffs. If you can't take someone off of the first power play unit, Strom, who is not good enough, then you're not going to win games. If you can't figure out how to beat anybody in the slot, then what's the point? He has to adjust, and when he does adjust, it's not correct, in my opinion. You see how the kids played in game one and two, how they were simply the best line in the series so far. And in game three, he played them at a decent rate to the fourth line, which has Ryan Reeves on it. I'm sure he's a fantastic person and a great hockey player and any other respect, but when he plays almost the same amount as an Alexis Lafreniere, then you're not going to win a game. It is being outcoached when the other coach knows how to take advantage of that, and he needed to learn for game four, which he subsequently did not.
Yeah, and I think we could probably breeze through this game because there really isn't honestly much to talk about. Mm-hmm. Game four, the Rangers just didn't have it. They were bad. The fact that they escaped the first period only down 1-0 was crazy. The fact that they escaped the second period only down 2-0 was crazy. They were still in that game, but you could just tell that they just didn't have it. And I texted you, and I texted everyone that I know. Like, the Rangers this whole playoffs have always had just a duck of a game. It was, I think, game five against Pittsburgh when they lost 7-0 or 7-2. It was game 4. They lost 7-2 to Pittsburgh. Game 5 was the Carolina game, where even though they only lost 3-1, they just had nothing. Carolina was all over them. This is kind of that too, where the Rangers had absolutely nothing going for them the entire game. Cooper had figured them out. And it was embarrassing. That's really all I could say is it was just embarrassing. I mean, it hurt that Strome didn't play. It hurt that Hedl got hurt. And I hope both of those guys are okay and ready to go for game 5, because if they're not ready to go, even though, yes, the New York is a much better home team, it's hard to see them winning that game. If Hedl, who's arguably been one of the best guys this playoffs, is not playing. Yep. Strome, even though he is now like the ghost of this team. You need him in the lineup just because
second line center, right?
Yeah, he's just your second line center. Yeah, you can move Hedl up to play with Panarin and Kopp, but it's like, are you putting Gaudreau on the third pair? Are you putting Rooney on that third line? Oh. It's like you have a lot of questions that need to be answered. So you're hoping that these guys can come back. But yeah, I really have nothing to say about game 4 besides like it was just a bad game by the Rangers and I don't fear game 5 being terrible just because the Rangers are always good coming off a loss like that.
Yep.
They case in point, game 4 happens for Pittsburgh. What happens? The Rangers win the next 3.
They do.
They move on. Game 5 happens in Carolina. Guess what happens? They win the next 2. They move on. We're in that situation here. It's game 5. This is, and I always tell everyone, if it's a tied series, game 5 is the most important game of a 7-game series. It's the most important game. And I think the stat is 75% of teams who win game 5 end up winning the entire series. So if the Rangers with home ice advantage can win tomorrow, I think they move on.
Yep. So I do have a few things to say about game 4. First, I have a question. Second, I have a question. First, I have a statement. I believe I texted Chris during that game and talked about Jackass 4.5. Mm-hmm. So if that gives you a perspective on the attentiveness or the amount of faith Ranger fans have during this game, it was low. I had a friend, Eric, who told me, yeah, I'm good. Then he started playing video games. It's one of those games where in the regular season, you just know they don't have it. My question, other than did you want to burst your head through a fucking wall, is what is wrong with Gerard Gallant that game? Because he had a rollout for the first 2 periods before Hedl was injured of the first line, the second line, the fourth line, then the first line, and then the third line. I don't understand why he did not want to play the kids that game. And clearly, if you watch the Kucherov breakaway goal or the first goal, the first and second line are too tired. They're tired because they're playing too much.
Yeah.
What? Is it because of the defensive zone, which they didn't have too many mistakes? They didn't get scored on, I don't believe. What exactly is going on with Gallant? I don't understand his idea. My thing is they didn't have it because they were too tired and he didn't play anybody properly. Everyone was deployed awkwardly to a point where I'm kind of nervous that he wants a Greg McKegg next game that everybody's injured. And he deployed these first 2 lines without their second line center. So what the fuck happened? What is he doing?
I don't know. It was just a poorly coached game by him. There's nothing outside of just it was a poorly coached game by him. It was a fairly clean game by Tampa Bay. Yeah. I don't think New York had a power play until the 3rd period. It was already too late. And as soon as that goal went in, I had already tweeted, I think at the end of the 2nd period, yeah, I said, you know, they're still down 2-0. I'm like, this game was screaming. The Rangers are going to try to make an effort to come back into this game.
Yep.
And with 3 minutes left and give the Lightning everything they have to win. And that's pretty much exactly what happened, because Panarin scored. And even though it was a 3-1 game at that point, the Rangers doing everything they can to try to get back in that game, which was the wrong, which I get why you're doing it. There's time on the clock. You do that. But for me, I'm just like, just try to score 5-on-5, because it's like there's no point in taking Igor out. The team with 6 guys on the ice are not going to be able to put it past Fast. He was locked in, and you got out coached for 57 minutes at that point. Why you're not going to get that second goal? I did not believe they were going to get that second goal.
Also, another question: why is Kapokako and Ryan Reeves on the same line again?
I don't know. That's another thing. Gallant loves to move like. when, and someone pointed this out on Twitter, they said when Kako has more time on the ice, you could just see that he's way more confident. He believes in himself a lot more. But when you start diminishing his ice time, that's when he starts second guessing himself. Am I making the right play? Should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? He doesn't really know what to do with the puck on his stick when you're questioning what he's doing, or not questioning what he's doing, when you're questioning whether or not he should have more ice time or not, or just the same amount of ice time. Gallant takes away his ice time, and that just diminishes his game. So if there's one thing that I'm hoping Gallant understands is that, like, you got out coached. That doesn't mean you need to start taking guys off the ice or switching lines, because you already saw Kako and Reeves, and I don't remember who was on that. I think it was Kako, Rooney, Reeves, because Barclay Goodrow was still hurt in the second series at one point. It just didn't work. It was just like, I get why you did it, but it just didn't work.
It didn't work again here. It didn't work because Kapo Kako, Ryan Reeves are on the same line. You can't. It just doesn't. Remember when I mentioned running through a wall or busting my head through a fucking wall? That's kind of what I'm referring to. It just doesn't. It's just so obnoxious. I don't know how you can sit behind a bench.
It's irresponsible.
Yeah. How do you sit behind a bench and watch it happen and say, this is fine, he'll learn? Because this fucking kid is going to not. He's going to play safe. He's not going to know what to do. He's going to play nervous. And you know what that reminds me of? I wasn't the biggest hater of this guy, but he reminds me of David Quinn. And if you say that out loud, speaking of Rangers Twitter, God bless them. I'm so sorry. I will not tell them my Twitter handle or else I'll die. But Gallant reminded me of David Quinn. Is not good. It is not a good start. It is not a good finish. Honestly, it reminds me of something that another podcast mentions all the time. Yes, Alain Vigneault went to the Stanley Cup final his first year, but was it in his detriment? I don't know, right? Like, it seems like they're winning in spite of him sometimes. He is a player coach, and I totally get that. But it seems like they're working past what he's putting them through. Last game, there was chemistry issues. Strome was out, I get it. But the way he deploys, like, Hedl wouldn't have – this is total projection, but Hedl wouldn't be injured because he wouldn't be playing at that time. He should have had more ice time. It would have been different. It looks like he got checked into the boards with his wrist, which is not good because that's what injured him against the Penguins years ago. Thanks, Evan Rodriguez. Last year.
Comeback, Evan Rodriguez. Yeah. Evan Rodriguez, if you're listening to this, fuck you.
Honestly. Unless you want to sign for 1.5 for like a year. No, but
fuck that.
That's
what I hate him. Fuck you.
That's what I said. Yeah, fuck him. But I just don't understand. He has to – maybe it was a statement game for people he doesn't like on the team. I don't understand. But game 5 at MSG, he can't do that again.
Yeah, no. I don't really have much else to say.
Yeah,
no. Game 5 is a must-win for the Rangers. Obviously, you win this game, you have life. You lose this game, and it's looking pretty bleak. Looks like the summer is right around the corner for them if they lose this game. So,
yeah.
I think the Rangers win this game tomorrow. I think it's a bounce-back game for everyone. I'm going to go with a 3-1 victory for New York. I think it's going to be close until the end. There's going to be an empty netter. I'm going 3-1 New York.
5-4 overtime.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I just – it's Lightning one of those are bad games.
The Lightning lose on the road, and the Rangers have yet to lose in regulation at home.
My thing is Carolina was, 7-0 at home? They lost a game 7. I can see a game where they win, but it's one of those games where it could be a shit show. It's one of, you know, it could just be one of those. Shesterkin gives up a few. He did that a bit in the first round, but
I think we'll have a better idea tomorrow. But all right, I can see that happening.
It's also possible that it doesn't happen because Nick Paul is currently their second line center, which means the Rangers should win. Also, if they make it to the Stanley Cup final, Nazem Kadri's still out, but who knows? Honestly.
All right, so that's it for Rangers talks. Actually, not really. Moving on. A little bit of news that came out this week, and honestly, we're just going to kind of breeze through the rest of these topics because there's not much else to talk about. But the biggest thing to come out of the Rangers camp outside of the playoffs, obviously, is Vitali Kravtsov, a name that we all know and love. He rejected the another contract to re-sign with Traktor. and stay in the KHL. So confirm to everyone that he is going to play in the NHL next year, or hopefully play in the NHL next year. But my question for you, Jake, is he going to play for the New York Rangers?
No.
Okay, that's we're on the right track.
Yeah.
I've been saying it for a while, and I think everyone's been saying it for a while. Vitali Kravtsov in New York is a no-go.
No.
He can probably get them a second-round pick if at most right now. There's nothing there outside of what he's done in the KHL that can get you someone comparable to him that's currently in the NHL. I just don't see – it's not going to be a player. No. You're not going to get a first for him. No. You're going to probably get Elias Anderson, second-round pick back for him.
So I'm half and half, because the reason he was drafted, ninth overall, I believe, a few years ago?
2018.
Is his playoff performance. And he continues, for some reason, in the KHL – he was even dropped to the VHL, I believe, last year or the year before.
It was last year before he went back this year.
Yeah, he's a playoff performer. And that's what got him drafted so high. We didn't draft Noah Dobson. We didn't draft Wahlstrom. Because this kid could score in the playoffs. And that's what the Rangers wanted in the future. Because they assumed that he'd come in 3 years. Which is part of the reason why they don't want him to play. They want him to marinate. And it's a whole different issue
there.
Well,
that's the thing.
But,
yeah, he didn't want to play in the AHL. It's like there's so many and Kevin and I have gone into this at nauseam, just like how both parties, New York and Chris Drury and Kravtsov, everyone was wrong.
50-50.
Both sides are wrong, and it's okay for both sides to be wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like he doesn't have any legit experience. He got into a few games at the end of the season last year, but like that was it. Like he has a few games of U.S. North American NHL hockey.
Yeah.
Like he does not have any experience outside of that. He doesn't have it.
No.
So if I'm a team that's interested in trading for him, New York has the asset there. It's a losing asset. New York is not going to get back it's not going to get back a first round pick. It's not going to happen. So the most they get back is a second round pick, but you're taking such a risk. Yes, he is a playoff performer. You are taking a risk on a guy who's going to be 22 or 23. And sure, he might come in and put 30 up his first season.
Yep.
Who knows? But he might also just be very bad and get sent back down to the minors. And are you going to see him go to the minors and be like, I don't want to be here. I'm going. But you can't go back to Russia because there's no contract anymore. Like, there's nothing.
If we're talking about a 50-50 thing where it's half his fault, if he goes to another team and he gets sent down, that's a kick in his ass where he's like, maybe I should practice in the AHL, right?
Or
develop. Like, maybe that's his kick in the ass. But part of it is, so the reason why I don't think he's going to be a Ranger, it wasn't about all the issues. Of course, that's part of it. But I think Brendan Othman is the final nail in the coffin. They have a winger. They have a winger that they could put on the third line potentially next year. Before that, I thought they might – they have Panarin, they have Shesterkin, they have people that make him feel comfortable. But I don't think it fucking matters anymore. I think they have a kid that can score when he comes into the league. Neither of them can score until they can prove it, obviously. But now they have a reason not to have him. He's a damaged good, yes. But also they can use him as a secondary. So if they trade Georgiev in a pick for something, they can throw him in too just to finish a deal, right? If they just want to throw him for a pick, they can. But I don't know if Chris Drury is that type of GM.
I do, because he doesn't like him. So Chris Drury does not like him and has a lot of moves he needs to make this summer with a very tight cap. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they lost picks this year in the draft. They don't have a first this year.
No.
Their second's still there.
I'm okay that they don't have that first.
Yeah, like, they don't have that first, but their seconds are still there and everything. So it's like, you know, I don't know. I don't think Kravtsov plays for New York. I would be very surprised if he plays for New York.
If they have money in Vegas right now for that, I might put $1,000 on that.
Yeah.
He's not fucking playing here.
Yeah, there's just no shot he plays in New York. I don't know where he plays, but for me, I just think it's for the best of everyone at this point just to move on. I think if you could just get a second rounder for him, like if that's the best offer on the table, you just do it and you send him off somewhere and you see what happens. If he turns out to be the superstar, It sucks for New York, but you know what? You waited too long, and you had the opportunity to give him what he wanted. You didn't want to do it. So it is what it is. I get that you want to tell your guys you got to prove it. But you know, if it ends up that he gets traded somewhere and becomes a superstar, so be it. But if he gets traded somewhere and is just a middle six guy, and you get a second rounder back,
it could be,
you don't lose that. That's not a loss for me because I'm like, whatever.
It could be a learning moment for Drury. Could be his first mistake. I mean, I think it's a mistake if the rumors are true that he was a dick to Kravtsov in general. But if he
gets traded, I don't know those rumors. Those are reports at this point.
Then it's a learning moment. Even if he doesn't kill it somewhere else, it happens with Anderson. And it happened. Of course, he was in charge then, but he was the GM for the.
He was around though, and he was around when Kravtsov got drafted. Like
he was a GM for the Wolfpack, right? Like he was there for Anderson.
I think he was an assistant to Gorton too. Yeah. So it's like so he knows these guys. Like he's had his hands in scouting and stuff, and okaying these picks along with Gorton, along with Davidson. So it's like it's just for me. It's time to move on.
Also, if another European draft pick top 15 goes down the drain like this, I'm gonna have to throw fucking hands. I might headbutt the guy. I don't know.
It's more of a Rangers thing if that happens than a player thing, in my opinion.
I totally get Schneider being up in the lab. He's fantastic. Some underlying numbers which aren't the best. We're always known for Schneider. That's why people were upset they've drafted him. But he's fine. He's doing great. He's a good bond six guy as of now. But this weird European antithesis thing going on is odd. And Drury seems to be in the forefront. But like I said, if he can control this, if he can control the team, honestly, the first amazing thing Drury has done was the trade deadline, right? Like, if he can keep this track going and not have, like, a bunch of weird rumors going on and everything up to that point and doesn't screw up going past the Eastern Conference Final and going to next season, then sure. But right now, he fucked up with Kravtsov, and they need to figure it out. It's just that simple. They need to figure it out.
Yep, I agree. Moving on. Something else that happened pretty recently, kind of a big piece of news. Bruce Cassidy got fired from Boston. Not going to dive into this too much, but Boston kind of fucked that one up, right?
Bad.
Yeah. And sorry, Kevin. I mean, that's kind of a coach that I feel like I'm interested if Kevin would like Bruce Cassidy on the Islanders.
Must.
Like it would. I feel like that would kind of be like, not the push to get them over the hump, but like that, because they just had Trotz, and even though Trotz, like, it wasn't like Trotz got like outcoached by Cooper.
No,
like they lost last year because of a shorthand goal, and I forget why they lost. And
Tampa's a better team.
Tampa, yeah, the year before was just a better team,
and the year after,
yeah. So I mean, like, yeah, I just feel like. I don't know why. I feel like the Islanders, Bruce Cassidy, would kind of be like a match made in heaven. So I'm interested to see how Kevin feels about that. But just quick off the cuff, where do you think, or cuff forever, where do you think he ends up?
So two things. I don't know, but
if you had to guess.
If I had to guess. Man. I would say Winnipeg, but it's going to be Barry Trotz.
Trotz is going to Winnipeg. I think if the Florida job is still open, he goes to Florida.
Yeah, I guess honestly, if Brunette would back down, and so Brunette's either going to become a head coach somewhere else or be an assistant. Yeah. I think he would like that. I mean, he might. He's probably going to win. Who won Coach of the Year? Sutter.
Yeah,
he came in second, I assume, or third, obviously. But I think that team is good enough to where Bruce Cassidy will shut down their defense, make everything as tight as possible, and then they might not get swept next year by Tampa. So my guess is actually Florida. You're right about that.
Yeah, I'm thinking Florida for him, or if Vegas fired DeBoer, maybe they go after him.
I think Vegas is going to make a run for Trotz. I know he's going to go to Winnipeg. I'm like 90% sure, but these fuckers don't back down. They didn't back down for Eichel. I think they were ahead of everybody for Pietrangelo.
The Eichel thing, it wasn't like that was like they didn't back down because New York was basically the Rangers were basically told
we're not. Anyhow, Anaheim was there too, but they're in the forefront for every big name. Right?
I firmly believe that Eichel was going to get traded to New York if the Pekulas just didn't have the made-up rivalry in their head that the Sabres and Rangers are rivals.
As someone who lived in Buffalo for 4 years, they have little – you think that the Islanders have little brother syndrome. Sorry, Kevin. But Buffalo, God, does.
I don't get it. Like, I have never thought of the Sabres.
They have little brother syndrome for New York and Toronto. It's bad. It's embarrassing there. But, you know, the fans and all that. It's not the fans. It's more of the ownership. It's been like that for a very long time. So I actually have a question for you in regard to the new coaches. So Trotz is available, obviously not for the Islanders. Cassie's available. Claude Julien's available, right? So for the Islanders, did they did they make a decision too quickly? Was it too rash? And for the Rangers, I know they're in the Eastern Conference Final. I get it. And I'm happy. And I want to cry every time they win, basically. Kind of joking. But do you think that the original plan that JD and Jeff Gorton had of maybe having DQ for one more year, I know, if they waited 1 year and they had these options available, would that have been worth it?
But it's only if – well, it depends because, I think if the Rangers missed the playoffs, because I think they probably would have missed the playoffs, I think the Rangers under Quinn might have been a wild card team. I don't think they would have placed where they would have been, so they probably would have been a wild card team. They probably would have gotten eliminated first round.
Good start for the Kings.
And if – well, you gotta learn to lose before you win.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I think if Cassidy got fired and New York was a first-round exit, Quinn gets fired and then you bring Cassidy in. Right now, no. Should they take a shot at Cassidy? Yeah, they should. But I think just with the way Gallant coaches and the relationship he probably has with Drury, I don't think these two had a conversation that like it's just going to be a 1 year thing. It's a prove it thing, and if you win the cup, then you stay. But like Gallant just has this like, and it's not that he's a bad coach, and obviously the guys love him. It's just he just makes bad choices every once in a while. Overall, I don't think he's a bad coach, but Cassidy, I think, is a better option. But I think if JD and Gorton were still here and Quinn was still here, if they gave it one more go, they were first round exit. Yeah, they probably are offering Cassidy a head coaching job next season.
So in the end, we can say fuck Dolan.
Pretty much. I mean, okay. it's always fucked up.
It's awful.
Guy's an asshole.
Now I'm thinking of the Knicks. Let's move on.
And the last thing I have on the docket is the Avalanche Oilers. I put this on our sheet the other day just because I didn't think it would be a sweep, but the Avalanche swept the Oilers. I don't have too much to say about this besides the fact that Mike Smith is just a terrible goalie, and it's time for him to move on to greener pastures. Georgiev for Puljujarvi, 1-for-1, make it happen. And, I feel bad for McDavid.
So here's my issue. I think McDavid's going to stay because he is I think he's probably a great guy, very simple-minded. And thinks, I made it to a Western Conference Final. I have full confidence in Ken Holland. Who says that, right? It's him. He has to. You would think if they missed the playoffs this year, there might have been a trade request. But no, they made it to the Western Conference Final, so he's going to feel confident, which is unnaturally terrible. So a few reasons why that's terrible. First of all, they got swept in the worst way possible. Duncan Keith and Cody Ceci are your second. Think about that. Imagine this for the Rangers. Cody Ceci and Duncan fucking Keith, 30,000-year-old Duncan Keith, are the second pair, not the third pair, defenseman for the Oilers. And Mike Smith was the goalie, and they didn't trade for anybody. I know we can say that they should have gotten Georgiev or whoever the fuck. But what is wrong? They've been wrong, stupid for 10 years, but what the hell is going on? I don't understand. McDavid's not going to request a trade. I mean, the only reason Eichel left is because there's a disagreement about his fucking neck, right?
Yeah.
But what is it going to take for McDavid to leave? Because it was embarrassing. That was an awful series. Avalanche are amazing, and I get it. And Evander Kane's a dick and he played great, whatever. But what do they have to do? Because there's nothing to talk about that series other than the Oilers need to do something.
You get better goaltending and you fix the defense and yeah. The Oilers have a better team, a substantially better team. In my opinion, I think if you get competent goaltending like Georgiev and someone else, yeah. you're already in a much better spot. And I think if you just get a better third line or third pair, you're in a much better spot. You at least have a chance in that yeah. series because I think their lines weren't that bad. I think they
didn't have a chance though. They got wrecked.
But they did. Like game four, they were in that game. They only lost that game because Mike Smith sucks. Smith lost that game.
They were in game four, but in that game they were down 3-0. They weren't.
Lost the series, but like they at least would have injected some life yeah. into that series because the way they play, like yeah, sure. They got brought to the distance with the Kings, but they did fucking work. They worked Calgary. I mean, Calgary had that one game where it was like, sure, it yeah. was a 9-6 win, but it's like after that, Calgary did not look like a good team. Like
they didn't.
Like yeah. the Oilers were a much better team. So it's like, and Calgary is a better team than the Kings are. I think they would have given a good series to Colorado. They're pretty much on par with them. So I didn't think that the Oilers would enter this series and face as much issues as they did. But it was just a weird series. And I think McDavid, he doesn't request, I think, you know, he only has a few years left.
Yeah.
So I think he either I don't know. I think if I'm McDavid right now, I think he has 2 years left on his contract yeah. before he becomes a UFA.
Yeah.
So McDavid, I feel if the Oilers are an early exit or are not competing for a Stanley Cup next year, he's requesting a trade and he'll just absolutely. I think he just wants to get here's the thing. He's gonna leave eventually and he's only getting older. So if I'm McDavid and I have 1 year left, trade me to a team, you know,
it's going to be the Kings.
Trade me to a team that can, one, pay my contract, yeah. and two, you'll get a huge haul for me for. And then even if I don't win a cup, if I can at least compete for one on a team that's better suited to compete for a cup right now, I'm still going to test the market once I go to free agency.
Yeah. Because,
and if you think that Connor McDavid is not going to test the market when he goes to free agency, you're a fucking idiot.
You're a fucking moron because
he's going to get $15 million fucking dollars.
I believe that the highest you can go is 15 or 15 and a half.
And it's going to go up. But in two, 3 years' time, the cap's going to go up. So like you'll probably get a little bit more. He's gonna get like what a supermax deal in the NBA is. He's going to get all the monies. He's going to get all the years. Because even at 27, I'm giving Connor McDavid $15 million over 8 years. Because he's 35, and I still think Connor McDavid at 35 is better than your best player on your team right now.
You know, post Trouba and Kreider trade, that's what the Rangers are going to go for in 3 years. But do you really think that Connor McDavid would consider leaving the amazing and beautiful place of Edmonton and leave his – do you see his amazing house, all the modern art and – no, okay, on a serious note. My thing is I think Edmonton should, but let me give you a recent history. Before the pandemic hit, they traded 2 seconds for Andreas Athanasiou. 2 seconds. Nothing happened. They traded for Mike Green. Do you remember that he was even in the league at that time? They signed Cody Ceci for multiple years at multiple millions of dollars. They traded assets for Duncan Keith's contract. And they signed Mike Smith last year. I don't know if you remember this. He has another year on his contract for $2 million.
He's going to get bought out.
He's going to retire. I think he retires
or gets bought out. There's no – if I'm Connor McDavid, I'm in Ken Holland's office. Yeah. And I'm like, if – fucking
does Ken Holland Koskinen
care, yeah. or Smith are either of our goaltenders next year. I'm requesting a trade July 1.
But like, would he do that? I don't see him
I think
doing
he
that.
Would. Because he wants to. He's the best player in the world and he wants to win. He doesn't give a fuck about Edmonton.
This is the best sport in the worst league, man. I don't know. Like,
but here's the thing.
Yeah.
You're right. It's the best sport in the worst league. Connor McDavid has the opportunity to change the narrative. He can be the guy who said, even Eichel kind of did it. Eichel was like the start. He said, I'm not fucking playing for this team unless I get the surgery I want. Trade me so I can get the surgery or fucking deal with me not playing. So Connor McDavid he's got the ball is in his fucking court. If he tells Ken Holland what Connor McDavid wants. Yeah. It's Connor McDavid's team. Connor McDavid is LeBron James right now. Yes. It's his team. You listen to whatever the fuck he tells you to do, because if you don't, he should. I don't know if he would, but he should 1,000% be the villain. He should be the villain and go, I don't want to be here anymore. Get me the fuck out of here. Yep. Send me somewhere good. And then if I don't win a cup there, I'm just going to go somewhere else and I'm going to try to win a cup there. Because you've had me for 6 years at this point, and you, I have nothing to show for it besides individual awards.
You know who actually started this? I think he made the wrong decision. And I'm going to say that for the fans of this podcast, John Tavares. He said, I'm going to – the Islanders were awful at the time, right? It was Garth Snow still. I know he just got fired, whatever. But he requested a trade. I mean, sorry, he didn't request for a trade. He said he wants to ride it out. I know he lied, whatever. We can move past that. But he went to a team that – yeah.
I'm doing a snake noise for you, Kevin.
Honestly, if you want to put that video on in the background, they said they betrayed him. He went to a team that should have won the cup by now. And honestly, I don't know how they haven't. I think it's demons. Who the fuck knows? I think the city.
It's the Lundqvist jersey under the UBS Arena.
It's the. Oh. So I think John Tavares started it. And for the better for the Islanders, they went to the ECF fucking 2 years in a row. But in general, that's what started it. The thing is, the reason why I think Connor McDavid can is John Tavares has no personality. Connor McDavid is the same thing, yet he knows how to ice skate. Big difference between the two.
See, the thing is, McDavid doesn't have a personality like when he's talking to the reporters. But like, if you've heard him on like Chicklet interviews and like commercials and stuff, like he's a funny guy. Like his NHL commercials for EA a couple years ago, like they were funny. They came up on my timeline the other day, and I was like, this guy's fucking funny. Like he's just a genuinely funny dude. He just seems like he probably wants to be a silly goose. But he can't because he's playing in Edmonton and hockey in Canada is just so like, ugh.
A few things I'd say that are negative towards him is, I mean, I'm during the pandemic and the George Floyd murder, and of course he was really bad at having late response. Or recently when they asked him about Evander Kane, he had no response about what happened and just said, I want the team to play better.
But I just think that's hockey culture in general is
100%.
I'm not chalking that up to McDavid's wrong. I'm just chalking that up to like the culture of the league is like always be late, but say something, but always be the last one to say it, and don't say anything that like would have someone go, oh my God, why would you say that? Because like it's just the league is just they're very far behind in terms of like having messages or putting responses out in response to horrible tragic events happening.
And for hockey culture, if we're gonna get specific, no one leaves their fucking team unless they get traded, right? Like
so that's why I'm saying he could be the first guy.
I know
Eichel kind of started it.
Edmonton, McDavid,
Edmonton, fuck this up. Fuck this up for everyone. Fuck this up for me. I want to see villain McJesus. I want to see him go, I do not want to be in Edmonton anymore. Trade me. Because Edmonton's going to try to do everything they can. But if he's requesting a trade and says, I will not lace my skates, you could find me till the cows come home. I've made $60+ million just in salary from you guys. I have brand deals, sponsorships. I have them. He has the money. He does not need to play hockey.
The past few years, Ken Holland probably heard that and said, all right, and hasn't done anything. Nothing's they got lucky this year, man. Calgary fucking folded, and their first round opponent was the Los Angeles Kings, where they were taken to game 7, right? Like, I just, oh my God. I remember the rumors for him getting traded. I was sitting in a fucking airport, sitting there, bashing my head against the window, because Chicklets were talking about it. And it was, what, 2017? This was, I'm sorry, 2018? This was 3 years, and they're already talking about how he should request a trade. He was getting off his ELC. But it's 2022, and we've been talking about it every year. Like, we should be talking about it with Austin Matthews, but we're not, because that's a good team that should go far, but they don't. Edmonton got lucky. They have Mike Smith as a starting goalie and some of the worst defense I've ever seen. And I just don't know if they're going to do it. I mean, I would love for him to be on the Rangers. I think he's going to be Los Angeles King. I feel like it's set in stone. I'm not talking about winning Gretzky trade, even though it's kind of a weird parallel there, but it's Edmonton. I barely remember when they made it to the Stanley Cup final. That happened, what, like 18 years ago now? It's just
16, I think. Then they make it to 06.
They made it in 06. It's been a brutal path since, and I just don't know.
I've said it with Kevin, and this is the last thing I'll say.
Yeah.
A McDavid trade, you got lucky getting McDavid, Edmonton. Yeah.
What if they didn't, right?
Yeah. So they got lucky getting McDavid, and they haven't done anything. He is a franchise player, without a doubt. Generational player. There's no one like him, right? You have not built a team around him. You've gave him some pieces here and there, but you have not done what is needed to be done in order to lead him. Like, they got really lucky this year getting to the conference finals, because they realistically almost got eliminated in the first round.
Should have.
At a certain point, Edmonton has to go, we don't know he's too good for us, and we don't know what to do, because you can't attract free agents there outside of McDavid, because it's Edmonton. So it's like, you have to be really good at drafting, and they're okay, they're decent, they're not great. So it's like, you're never going to get these marquee guys to go there. So your next best option is to trade McDavid. And again, this is the point I'm saying, is I told Kevin this: if you trade McDavid, you get at least four first rounders,
100%,
two blue chip prospects, a legit player, and maybe even throw in for McDavid, five first rounders, two to three blue chip prospects, and a starting player. That gets a trade done.
I wouldn't even think twice.
That gets a trade done in my eyes for McDavid. That, though, even though you and again, first round picks, you're outside of maybe like the top five guys each year, give or take.
You should have been the top five if you McDavid.
You're taking a risk. You're taking a gamble. You're essentially, it's just a lottery ticket. You get five lottery tickets. You can at least hit on one or two.
Yeah.
So if you get two good players out of the five, and then like maybe one like just line like guy who's in your lineup and just produces for you, and you get an elite guy and two great prospects, you're in a better spot, because even if they're not McDavid level, you just have great talent. Yeah. It's easier to build around that team than just building around McDavid, because they just don't know how to do it. To end this point, congratulations to the Avalanche.
Yeah.
Whoever they play in the cup, it's going to be tough, because I genuinely believe it's the Avalanche's cup to lose at this point.
They're going to play a real goalie.
They scored seven or more goals nine times this year.
I do hope, if the Avalanche win, that the first person that gets the cup after Gabriel Landeskog is Nazem Kadri. Genuinely. After everything that's happened to him recently, I'm rooting for the guy. It just so happens that my team might face them in the finals, right?
Yeah, I mean, if the Rangers play him, it's going to suck, because, like, even though I have all the faith in the world, I want the Rangers to win a cup. That is like a David versus Goliath type.
We never know if the Rangers will be back here. We don't know.
Who knows? You hope. I mean, you
fucking hope. Yeah.
That's about it. So, running a little bit long here, so we're just gonna, that's pretty much it. I hope McDavid requests a trade at some point. So,
I'm also gonna congratulate Kevin when the Islanders get David Pastrnak.
I don't think it's gonna happen. I think Kevin Fiala is probably more plausible.
Oh yeah, he's not gonna sign with Minnesota, is he?
No.
I think. Do you think they're gonna, super last question? You think Minnesota, total off brand, eliminating the first round? It's between
Dumba, which was embarrassing.
Oh, that was so bad. Between Dumba and Fiala. Are they going to choose Dumba?
Yeah.
Oh, that's brutal. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's Fiala. Yeah, it's Fiala.
Oh, if Fiala's. This ends up for the Islanders getting Fiala, I will never visit the state of Minnesota.
I would rather the Islanders get Fiala than the Islanders get Pastrnak. I would genuinely 1,000%. That Fiala is a great player, but Fiala does not scare me nearly as much as David Pastrnak. And having David Pastrnak on Long Island playing the Rangers – four times a year, and then potentially in the playoffs. No,
I'm not. Can I be honest with you? I think First of all, I hope that doesn't happen. Sorry. But I hope they sign classic old Islander Nino Niederreiter, who is a free agent from Carolina, for 5 years at $5 million. Because with Lou in charge, it's a possibility.
Who knows? Lou's a wild guy. Yes. So before I jump into the number of the week, we do have a segment called Lock of the Week. So I'm going to throw it over to you first. What's your Lock of the Week?
For what specifically?
Anything, whether it's sports, life, you know, what's something that's going to happen this week?
Oh, man, that the Golden State Warriors are going to win the NBA Finals.
Yeah, it's kind of theirs to lose at this point, I think. My Lock of the Week is that the Rangers will win tomorrow again. I am sticking by my guns. I think they will not finish off the Lightning, but I think they will go up in the series 3-2 and probably be a 7-game series, but who knows. That's my Lock of the Week.
They'll finally play a starter in Francois in the final, right? Because Vasilevsky isn't good enough. So
if they get there.
Knock
on wood.
Knock on wood.
Since Kevin's not here, it's not even his number of the week. It's my number of the week. So the number of the week this year, Jesus Christ, for this week is number one.
It's been a long week.
So the first player to ever wear number one for the New York Rangers was in the 1951-1952 season. It was Emile Francis, goaltender, small guy, as you can probably imagine. He was only 5'6", 145 pounds, and he played only a few years. He started at 20 years old and played till he was 25. So he only has 6 years of NHL experience, 4 years with New York. Didn't really do too much. No. Most of his games played were with, what is this team? The Blackhawks in 1947.
Acronym for sure.
Weird acronym on this website. He was not very good. He had 30 losses in the year he played the most games, allowing 183 goals. We'll just read through some of the other players. Chuck Raynor wore it next in the 51-53 season. Lauren Anderson, Gump Worsley, Johnny Bauer, Gordy Bell, Bruce Gamble, Julian, I don't even know how to pronounce this, K-L-Y-M-K-I-W.
Try.
Klimq?
You got it.
Fuck yeah.
I lied, but go on.
Yeah. All right, I'm going with it. Jack McCartan, Marcel Paillet, Al Rollins, Joe Schaefer, Dave Dryden, Dan Olesvik, I don't know, Marcel Pelletier, Jacques Plante, and then in...
Jacques Plante.
Sure.
Wait, go to him really quick. He, I believe, is the legend. Yeah, 437 career wins. Forgot he was a New York Ranger.
He was a Ranger for 2 years.
Yeah.
So, good for you, man.
Rangers legend, go on.
RIP, you dead bitch. I don't know if he's dead or not, but
I don't know.
Let's see. Is he dead? Yep, he's dead. Jesus Christ, he died fucking nearly 40 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever see the picture of his face? Go on. Anyway.
No, what happened? Did he get fucking mutilated or some shit?
Oh, no, his pucks hit it a lot.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yes, he got mutilated, yeah.
All right. someone wore it after him. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name. And then Eddie Giacomin. Boom.
Who knows?
All-time Rangers legend, wore it for 10 years, almost his entire career with New York before he got traded to Detroit.
Second best New York Ranger goalie of all time. I am sorry, Mike Richter. But go on.
You have Lundqvist first?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. He kind of got into the league late. His first year, he was 26 years old. But he had some lights out years for New York. His career save percentage in New York was a .905. He finished with a .902.
Back then, not a bad.
No, a .902 career save percentage for back then. It's impressive, I guess.
Yeah.
Guys after him who wore it, Doug, I don't know how to pronounce your last name. Sorry. Ooh. Dunk Wilson, Wayne Thomas, and Glenn Hanlon. 83-86, he was the last guy to wear it before he got retired. But yeah, that's pretty much it. A lot of goalies wore it, is what we're seeing here. And really nothing worth going into outside of the guys we talked about. But yeah, that pretty much wraps it up for this week. So thank you for listening. I know this is a longer episode, so hopefully you guys enjoyed that. A lot of good talk here. I felt. Thank you, Jake, for hopping on.
We
really appreciate you being here. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on whatever podcast platform you listen to. Give us a 5-star rating and leave a nice review. Share the podcast with everyone you know, just because it helps us grow that way. Make sure you follow the podcast on Twitter at From Broad to Bell. We're always tweeting on there and doing stuff there. So maybe we'll do an AMA or a mailbag episode soon just to get some content on the pod if the Rangers are eliminated. And yeah, we're always tweeting and answering DMs there, so feel free to reach out to us there. But yeah, that's about it. Jake, anything else before we go?
Please watch Chris's live streams during the games. They are a must watch.
Yeah, I haven't done one in a while, but
I'm gonna make them.
I'm probably gonna do one soon. I might do one tomorrow, so or today by the time you're listening to this.
I think the last thing I have is Let's Go Rangers.
All right, cool. Yeah. So you heard it from him. Let's Go Rangers, yeah. And I'll see you guys next week. Peace.